Welcome to Jonathan on Money, the personal finance podcast that brings you the latest insights and strategies to help you achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, Jonathan I. Shankman. On this podcast, we'll cover everything from investing, financial planning, retirement, and behavioral finance. I'll share advice and practical tips to help you make the most of your money. So whether you're just starting out or looking to take your finances to the next level, Jonathan on Money is here to help. Let's dive into this week's show. Welcome to this week's episode of Jonathan on Money. This is episode number 50. You heard that correctly, the big 5-0. And it's hard to believe that I've been doing this podcast for 50 weeks, but time flies when you're having oodles of fun. And a quick reminder for listeners who may not be aware, I share daily financial planning videos on YouTube. The name of the channel is Jonathan on Money, so be sure to subscribe so you can view that content. They're only about 2 to 3 minutes long and are generally on something quite timely, so be sure to check that out. Again, that's Jonathan on Money on YouTube. Anyway, as always, I have a great show today. My talking points this week will discuss a question I received recently on annuities and if they're a good investment. I imagine my thoughts will be triggering to some, which it always sparks joy in my life. We'll also discuss insightful quote from the grandfather of behavioral economics, Daniel Kahneman, who passed away last week. And as always, I'll spend the last half of the episode answering listeners' questions. And with that, let's jump into this week's talking points. So I received the following question recently from a Jonathan on Money fan, and it went as follows. There's a gentleman in my shul who's been encouraging me to purchase an annuity from him for the past year or so. He tells me that annuities have many benefits, such as having guarantees, tax-deferred growth, and not running out of money. He also said that this opportunity will not be around forever. My question is, are annuities a good investment? So annuities have a bad reputation, and rightfully so. In my opinion, they are a jungle of high fees, moving parts, and lack of transparency. In short, they are not usually the best choice. However, for the right investor, an appropriate annuity can be incredibly beneficial and lower stress levels. It's important for each investor to do their own due diligence to ensure that an annuity is the right fit for the specific circumstances. Hopefully, these talking points are a good starting point for your own research. Let's break down your question and give annuities a bit more context. First, don't rush. Annuities have been around for a long time, and despite what you've been told, they are not going anywhere. Furthermore, while annuity yields may be a bit higher now through some insurance companies, that is not a reason to rush into purchasing one today. So take a deep breath and fully evaluate your options. It's imperative that you take the time to complete your own due diligence before purchasing anything. Frankly, annuities are not the right answer for some investors. It's very difficult or impossible to undo a bad annuity decision. So take the time deciding if annuity is right for you. Next, annuities are not an investment. It's important to point this out. They are long-term policy contracts with an insurance company to provide you with a stream of income or possibly a certain minimum rate of growth for a set period of time in exchange for a hefty fee and lack of liquidity. When your fellow shul congregant mentioned that there are guarantees, he's referring to the contractual obligation of the insurance company from which you are buying the annuity. If the insurance company remains solvent, they should be able to fulfill their end of the contract. If the insurance company is not on solid financial footing, now or down the road, they may have a hard time holding up their end of the contract. There are no guarantees in life, just probabilities. When you view annuities from this vantage point, it can help you assess whether they are a good fit for your personal circumstances. Next point is tax benefits. Money within an annuity does grow tax deferred, and this may be a nice perk. However, never let favorable tax treatment drive an investment or financial planning decision. As I frequently tell my clients and their tax advisors, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog. You must first determine if an annuity makes sense independent of the tax benefits. Another point is that annuities come in many shapes and sizes, all of which fall into one of three general buckets. This is a bit long, but it's worth explaining. First is fixed annuities. Fixed annuities are when an insurance company guarantees both the rate of return and the payout to the investor. The interest rate on a fixed annuity can change over time. Often the interest rate is fixed for a number of years and then changes based on current rates. Payouts can be for an entire lifetime or you can choose another time period. Next is the variable annuities. Variable annuities offer investors choices among a number of complex contract features and options. With variable annuities, the rate of return might go up or down depending on the performance of the stock, bond, and money market funds that you choose as investment options. Variable annuities may be compared to mutual funds because of the fluctuating value of your investment choices held in subaccounts. The three things that variable annuities have that mutual funds do not are: one, tax-deferred treatment of earnings; two, a death benefit; and three, annuity payout options that can provide guaranteed income for life. And then there's indexed annuities. Indexed annuities are complex financial instruments that have characteristics of both fixed and variable annuities. They typically offer a minimum guaranteed interest rate combined with an interest rate linked to a market index. Many indexed annuities are tied to well-known indexes like the S&P 500. However, some use the indices that represent other segments of the market. There are also several methods of insurance companies use to calculate gains. The features of indexed annuities can be confusing for many investors. Indexed annuities are generally characterized as either equity index annuities, or EIAs, or registered index-linked annuities, known as RILAs. More can be said about each of these topics, but that's beyond the scope of this talk. In short, index annuities expose you to more risk than fixed annuities, but less risk than variable annuities. Next point is to keep in mind that annuities are complex. As my previous comments illustrate, there are many options and moving parts when it comes to annuities. A good rule of thumb is if you do not understand it, then stay away from it. Oftentimes, folks don't give themselves enough credit. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you are likely thoughtful, well-informed, and intelligent. If something doesn't feel right to you, then trust your judgment and stay away from it. Don't assume it makes sense simply because other smart people are doing it. Next, here's a scenario where an annuity may make sense. For most people, most annuities are expensive, unnecessary, and confusing. Folks should consider and probably pursue alternative solutions to meet their goals. That being said, I have come across one specific scenario in my own practice where annuities were an appropriate solution. The scenario is this: a client is terrified of the market. They are retired and already collecting Social Security. They may want to consider taking a maximum of 15 to 20% of their portfolio and putting it into an annuity called a single premium media annuity, or a SPIA. SPIAs are relatively straightforward and easy to understand. They provide a relatively high rate of income that is guaranteed by the insurance company for the rest of the client's life. They are used to help clients meet their cash flow needs while sleeping better at night because this stream of income is not tied to gyrations in the market. They are somewhat similar to an old school pension where income is provided and the onus for producing that income does not fall on the shoulders of the investor. The remaining 80% or more of the client's liquid assets should be diversified elsewhere, not in annuities, so they have liquidity. I would also encourage all clients considering this option to include a rider on the annuity that pays out at least 15 years in case the annuitant dies early. While this rider costs additional money, it also ensures that if the annuitant were to die before this 15-year period, the insurance company is on the hook to make payments to the beneficiaries for the duration of this 15-year period. I'll also note that this scenario comes up infrequently. It's important to reiterate the downside of this product as well. This includes the required lump sum payment, which is irrevocable. Additionally, income payments to the annuitant may be adversely impacted by inflation. And here's one final thought. The biggest determinant of whether an annuity makes sense in your own personal is your own personal situation. For some people, the right annuity can improve their lifestyle. For many others, it's a big financial mistake. If a salesman encourages you to buy an annuity as their first suggestion, I would be quite wary. They're likely putting their desire for a juicy commission above your own needs. Avoid these people at all costs. A financial professional should caveat the purchase of an annuity by encouraging you to take your time, do your own extensive research, and proceed cautiously. Okay, those are the talking points this week. And as a reminder, you can be notified of all my recent articles, webinars, and all the work I put out by subscribing to my free monthly newsletter at parkbridgewealth.com/newsletter. And we currently have about 8,500 subscribers and growing, so feel free to sign up and invite friends as well. Now for this week's money quote, which is from the late, great Daniel Kahneman, who passed away last week at the age of 90. For those who don't know, Daniel Kahneman was an Israeli-American author, psychologist, and economist notable for his work on hedonism, the psychology of judgment, and decision-making. He's also known for his work in behavioral economics, for which he was awarded the 2002 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences. Kahneman once said, A reliable way to make people believe in falsehoods is frequent repetition, because familiarity is not easily distinguished from truth. Authoritarian institutions and marketers have always known this fact. So this line is relevant in general and in finance. Generally speaking, politicians and news networks looking to push an agenda will keep saying the same talking points over and over and over again, and people actually end up buying into it even if it's false. The repetition causes folks to believe that it is true. In personal finance, we see this as well. I find this a lot when marketers are trying to pitch exclusive investments like hedge funds, private equity, or real estate deals. They will keep claiming how great these investments are, and people end up believing them. The reality is, for anyone who's willing to look under the hood and review the performance and risk profile relative to a portfolio of plain vanilla stocks and bonds, they'll realize that these more exclusive investments lose their allure. Just because someone is pushing the merits of them does not make them sensible, prudent, or advantageous to most investors. And I will actually discuss Kahneman and his impact on personal finance in more depth in a future episode. I did just want to pay a quick tribute to him this week since he just passed away. Okay, now let's jump into this week's financial questions. And if you do have a question, feel free to submit it to me at jonathan@parkbridgewealth.com, and it may be answered in a future episode. Okay, first question. My kid is dating a girl seriously, but neither him nor his girlfriend have a decent job. They want to get married, but I think they need to get their careers on track first. What say you? First, what do you mean by not having a decent job? This phrase can mean many things. It can mean a low-paying job, a dead-end job, a thankless job, an unfulfilling job, a temporary job that is not the career they ultimately want to pursue. The key here is the young couple's ability to afford their lifestyle. If they can do that with no outside financial support and you don't see any other red flags in the relationship, then they should get married when they are ready. Their current job shouldn't get in the way of that. As general advice, I'm not a big fan of the philosophy of waiting to get married or waiting on doing anything in general until everything else in your life is in order. Life just doesn't work like that. Take the opportunities as they come or you may miss them. There is no such thing as the optimal time, optimal situation, or optimal portfolio. Don't let perfection hold you back. If you meet your Bechera before your career gains momentum, then tie the knot while you are continuously trying to improve your career trajectory. All that being said, if the young couple is expecting to live the life of the rich and famous and don't make any money, then you should be very clear that you are not supporting their lifestyle, or they will find out the hard way. Next question. If there is one single piece of financial advice you could give your kids, what would it be? If I'm limited to only one piece of financial advice to give my kids, it will be this. Develop a skill set that will allow you to earn a livable wage. Things happen in life that may cause you a lot of money, that may cost a lot of money, and you don't want to rely on others for financial support. The ability to have the skills and capability of earning a livable wage can never be taken away from you. It is the single best piece of financial advice for any young person. If you end up in a bad financial situation but still have high earnings potential, you can dig your way out of any hole. If you do not have that skill set and you end up in difficult financial times, things will be tough and you may need to depend on the generosity of others, which is never ideal. Instilling this advice before a child decides what degree to pursue in college is imperative so they don't end up majoring in Native American basket weaving or a degree that is similarly not practical, along with the $250,000 in debt they will use for this degree. Next question. I missed the big run-up in NVIDIA. I still think it's a good company. Should I buy the stock now? So if you've done your research and it makes sense within the context of your overall portfolio, then you could buy it. If it doesn't, then don't. The current price of the stock really means very little. We constantly see stocks hit new all-time highs all the time. They can keep rising and rising until they don't anymore. The question is the company positioned for future growth? If you have to ask me this question, you're probably not a seasoned investor and you're just speculating. Speculating on stocks is never a prudent investment strategy. Get on an investment program where you don't need to worry about whether it is a good time to buy or sell a stock or not. What are your thoughts on unions? So I'm not an expert on unions, and I'm actually far from an expert. So I normally wouldn't opine, but I guess this is sort of related to personal finance, since affiliating with unions impacts income, benefits, and overall career trajectory. My inexpert thoughts on unions are that they are unnecessary and seem to cause more damage than benefit. Remember, when unions get higher wages to their members by restricting entry into an occupation, those higher wages are at the expense of other workers who find their opportunities reduced. They also make many workers less productive and unmotivated. When you have a large union with a lot of power who will fight for you to stay employed, even if you don't do much work, then there's no incentive to put in any work. The inability to fail removes motivation and ensures that you will have a lot of mediocre and subpar workers. This is a takeaway from a recent discussion I had with someone who was a member of a union for 30 years. In today's day and age, with workers' rights and protections, I see no need for unions to quote-unquote protect employees. I see them holding people back from achieving their full potential, keeping wages artificially high, which will hurt the ability for young, inexperienced people to get a job and work their way up the corporate ladder, and they also hold companies hostage when they want increased wages. This impacts even more people. I'm sure this answer will trigger some, but that's the way I see it. The next question is, I'm switching employers soon and my current employer has a great 401k plan. What happens if my new employer does not? What strategies would you recommend? First and foremost, I would max out your current employer 401k plan for this year before moving, so at least you are fully invested in this good plan. This is especially important since oftentimes you might not be eligible to enroll in a new employer's 401k plan for the first year of employment. Next consideration, if your new plan is really subpar, is keep in mind that there must always be a default investment option, usually a target date fund that is usually sufficient for your needs. Obviously, a target date fund is not optimal, but 401ks are inherently quite limiting in terms of their investment options, and unless the fees are astronomical, it is a perfectly reasonable option for a 401k. If you ever leave the new employer, you can roll the new funds into an IRA with more broad investment options. In the meantime, I doubt the 401k is as bad as you think it is. Hopefully, your new employer is reviewing your plan every year to try to improve it. If not, tell them to reach out to me and I could review their plan at no charge and set them up with the best retirement plan on the market. Next question, should I be concerned with the recent antitrust lawsuit by the DOJ against Apple? Maybe. If you're heavily weighted in Apple stock or the tech sector, then yeah, you should be concerned. However, if you have an appropriately diversified portfolio, then this is immaterial to your life. The issue with many rookie investors is that they invest in things that excite them. This means heavy allocation tech stocks, specifically a company like Apple. And investing in these companies has worked out very well over the past 15 plus years and covered up the fact that concentrating your money in just a few stocks or areas of the market is very risky. A black swan event, or at least something negative and unexpected, can cause investors without proper risk controls to get wiped out. Remember, a massive lawsuit, accounting fraud, or imprudent management of your business can take down even the best and biggest companies. As long as you're managing your money prudently and not gambling in one area of the market, you will be fine. If you're taking concentrated risk, you should be comfortable with the consequences. Next question, why would anyone use a Roth retirement option in peak earning years over a traditional IRA, since with traditional you get tax deduction and Roth you may need to pay full tax load? A couple of reasons come to mind. One, more certainty. With a Roth, you pay tax now and you don't pay again. However, with a traditional, you get a deduction now but have no clue what you will pay in the future. If your taxes go up, a very realistic scenario, by the way, you will pay more on your distribution from your IRA account that would stink, especially when you are in retirement and need to make the most of your funds. And the second thing is estate planning. Money in a Roth can grow until you die, and then you can pass down the funds down to your kids who need to take it out over the past of the next 10-year period, but don't need to pay taxes. A pretty nice situation. Next question, Pesach is right around the corner. My spouse wants to go away and we don't have the money to do that. What do? You should see a marriage counselor and don't go away. Going away without the ability to pay for it is insane. Furthermore, financing your vacation with debt is crazy. And finally, spending 8 days going away on a program where half the time will be yontif, so you don't do anything that you would normally do on vacation, while you're also fighting with hundreds of other yidim over a buffet breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all while you spend 10 times what you would spend on a normal vacation, doesn't seem optimal. Save your vacation for another time of year. This will save you money, your sanity, and in your case, your marriage. Next question. I only own the S&P 500 and have done very well. Admittedly, I need some guidance on my finances. My question is, what type of ongoing benefit is there working with a financial advisor? Will they be able to outperform the S&P 500? This is a good question because it touches on various topics like risk, financial planning, the necessity of ongoing advice, and the purpose of investing. It's highly unlikely any investor you speak with will be able to outperform the S&P 500 over the long term. Anyone that claims that is a fool or a charlatan. However, most investors' goals is not to outperform an arbitrary index. It's to live the lifestyle they want. The S&P 500 will not allow you to do that. With S&P 500, you can lose a substantial amount of money from year to year, or it can remain stagnant for many years. That is not helpful to most people's lives. The last thing you want is to have a lost decade or get wiped out right before you need the funds. A far better approach is to hire someone that can put you on an investment program to grow your wealth over time, manage risk, and make sensible financial decisions as they come up, and allow you to achieve your goals. The combination of these things will likely result in a larger nest egg, but more importantly, will allow you to financially maintain the lifestyle you want. No one investment is going to get you to the promised land. It's a process of consistently making good money decisions over a multi-decade time horizon. Next question, what advice would you give to someone in their 20s? There are two main pieces of advice I would give. There is obviously a lot more I could say, but much of the other advice will vary based on a person's circumstances. So the first is start saving while you're young. A long time horizon is the most important aspect of investing. If you start maxing out your 401k in your 20s and continue doing so for the next 4 to 5 decades of your career, it will lead you to be a very wealthy person. Two, build your human capital. This essentially means positioning yourself to be able to make a good income as you progress throughout your career. This may require getting a degree or acquire a skill set that you actually use and employers value. It means getting the proper work experience, even if that means taking a lower paid job early in your career. The ability to earn a decent income is the most important aspect of your financial life, what I mentioned earlier, and that's rarely discussed. Life has a lot of challenges. Many of them are directly or indirectly related to finances. Obsessing over optimal portfolios, fees, and a few percentage points in return is a waste of time. However, the ability to earn a livable wage will allow you to dig yourself out of many life's predicaments, and I hope the youths of America heed my advice. Okay, that's it for financial questions this week. Again, feel free to email me with any questions you have, and I might answer them in a future episode. You can reach me at jonathan@parkbridgewealth.com. Additionally, if you can take a minute to subscribe to this podcast and rate the show on Apple or Spotify, will help other personal finance enthusiasts find the show as well. And with that, it's a wrap for this week's show. Any comments or questions, feel free to reach out directly to me via email. I love hearing from my listeners. And finally, the secret to financial success is no secret at all. It's to spend less than you make, invest the difference prudently, and ignore all the noise. See you next time on Jonathan on Money. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. I hope you were able to take away a nugget or two to apply to your own life. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you can be alerted whenever new episodes drop. If you'd like to submit a question that may be answered in a future show, please email me at jonathan@parkbridgewealth.com. Be sure to check out all Jonathan on Money content, including all of my articles, webinars, and videos by following me at Jonathan on Money on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Finally, if you like what you heard today, please rate the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This helps ensure that other personal finance enthusiasts can find the show as well. Thank you, and catch you on the next episode of Jonathan on Money.